Ryan, home field has been awesome. They've been a partner for the entire season. And you know what? I think even though the holidays are coming and going, and you're not going to be able to get these pants or shirts or sweatshirts in time for the holidays, remember that we're going to have a whole 2024 season of Gopher football, and get prepared now so you're ready for 2024 spring game.
100%. Or if you're just excited about Gopher hockey, Gopher basketball, they have unique designs on homefieldapparel.com where you can check it out, get yourself some things for the Gopher hockey season, Gopher basketball, and when you get the checkout, use promo code GG23, that is GG as in Gopher Gridiron, 23, and save 15% off your first order.
Ryan, again, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group has now sold their third house for asking price, Ryan. You know, again, this is just a great opportunity for listeners of this podcast, but also people from your website, Gopher Illustrated. And this specific listener actually went to Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group and wanted to support Gopher Athletics, and did so by selling their home.
They've sold multiple houses. They've sold houses, townhomes, whatever it may be. You're not on the market long. So if you're looking for a realtor, you don't know, you know, all you know is, I want to sell my house, I want to buy a house. You don't know anybody. Go to teamdinkytown.com. That's all one word. Or give them a call today at 612-250-8562. And welcome back to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am your host and GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And welcome to your recruiting rundown episode, as I am joined by the Midwest czar himself, the vegan, the pickleball champion. I also believe he is an accomplished comedian. Trust me, I've heard the stories. Alan True joins me on this episode today to go through the Gophers 2024 class. Answer some questions from the Gopher 24/7. Faithful Alan, it's the day after signing day. I look like a mess. You didn't even bother to turn your camera on, but how are you today?
I feel some relief, so that feels good. People do not want my camera to be on right now. I was on camera enough yesterday. 4 hours a year is plenty, but feeling good. We're almost at the finish line. Just the last couple of loose ends to tie up. Thank you for waiting until today to ask me to come on, not Tuesday or Monday, because that would have been different headspace for me. But then I get to unplug tomorrow and Saturday. So don't even try to, I don't care if Adrian Peterson comes out of retirement and tries to commit to Minnesota. I will not take that call.
I think I might put that to the test, because as you know, 2025 recruiting never sleeps. Trying to tie up the loose ends in the 24 class, but at least on the Minnesota side of things, I believe they're about done for high school, at least as far as I've been told. I'd been telling the people on Gopher Illustrated all month that I didn't expect them to sign another high school kid that hadn't already been previously committed to them. That's at least come to fruition, but I want to start with probably the headliners of this class that come from the Midwest, and that's what we're going to keep it to with Alan today, is that's obviously his bread and butter. And let's start with now, I guess, technically on our rankings, I see that there was a late movement, which I'm sure Alan True was a big a part of because he hates the University of Minnesota. But the number one player in the 24/7 composite anyway is a young man from Maquonago, Wisconsin, by the name of Nathan Roy, Alan. Now, this is a guy you and I have talked about for quite some time. I've seen him live. I mean, you've watched his tape. You've been around this industry long. So when you look at Nathan Roy, what makes him somebody that you and the rankings team elected to bump prior to his senior season, I believe, and then eventually move into the top 24/7 recruiting rankings?
Yeah, before that, even before he moved to Wisconsin, he was a little bit of a known prospect out west. And the first thing that caught our eye was he's a high-level thrower, which I explain this every year. People say, well, why do you look at discus and shot put results to evaluate offensive linemen, there's just an extremely high correlation. And if you go up and down NFL rosters and you pull some names of really good offensive linemen, odds are usually there's some other sport, basketball, hockey, something. But high-level throwers tend to be really good offensive linemen. It's just a combination of skills, flexibility, coordination, strength that it takes to do that. Usually you're pretty good at offensive line if you can do those things and you have the size. So that was the first thing we noticed about him. And then he moved here, and I thought his junior tape was really good. I think you and I had talked at the time and thought it reminded us of Greg Johnson just a little bit. Yep. There was one particular play where Nathan got out in front of the running back and was running with him down the sideline that was almost a mirror image of a play on Greg's tape where he was doing the same thing. And then I think as a senior, that continued to, you know, when I brought him up the first, I think he was stuck at an 89 or maybe a 90 outside for a while. And the team just wanted to see what he looked like as a senior, and the senior tape was outstanding. So we really liked the kid's athletic background, really liked how the tape improved each year. I like his approach, having talked to the kid and kind of gotten a sense of what he's about. Kind of a no nonsense, classic offensive lineman kind of guy. And then I think even the way he handled his recruitment, I think spoke about the kind of intangibles he has. So he checked a ton of boxes. We also like that he's versatile. I know they're talking about moving him around a little bit, similarly to Greg, where if you need him at tackle, I think he can play tackle. If you need him at guard, I think he can play guard. Heck, if you needed him to play center, I'm sure he could figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about just, to me, it's about just having as many data points as you possibly can and trying to figure out, because if there's one thing about our industry, Alan, everybody is about 2 inches shorter than what they're listed. Their 40s two times or 2/10 worse than what it normally is. And so for offensive linemen specifically, we'll talk about a few different linemen here coming up, but the shot, the discus background, whether they have a wrestling background, you put on their basketball tape, see how light on their feet there are. I mean, we don't give out scholarships, Alan, but we try to do our best to make sure that the highly rated kids are probably the ones that have quite a few different options in the terms of where they could go to college, right?
Yeah, I think the data points is a good, that's a good point, because unlike the NFL scouting process, we just can't watch, you know, they're going to watch every single minute of every game these guys have ever played. We don't have the luxury of doing that at the high school level. So a lot of the time our enemy is just lack of information or lack of tape. Or so we're looking for as many different types of information as we can gather. You're just taking it all in and then figuring it out. So that's why those multi-sport backgrounds help. And we have noticed a correlation between those. Now that's not going to turn out every time. And it's just our job to find those outliers when they happen. But like I said, with Nathan, he checked a lot of boxes. And by the way, he's going to be heading down to San Antonio in not too long here to play in the All-American Bowl. And that's going to be an opportunity. The rankings are not locked. He goes down there and does well down there. That could be another data point that helps move him up.
Well, I figure we should just continue on the theme then of the four All-American Bowl commits, which for people who don't know, it's the former Army All-American game. It's just changed sponsors as far as I'm aware. Is that the way you interpret it, Alan?
Yes. There is an Army Bowl now again that's come back, but it's not the same.
Yeah, so it's not people the same confuse prestigious those. One, yep. Quote unquote, that this one, that Minnesota's got four commits or signees, I can say now. Now, the one that has probably had the biggest rise that I can remember in a Minnesota player, a Minnesota signee, is someone that I saw at a camp, I believe in late July, prior to his junior season. And I remember getting some of the testing data back, and I'm going through it. And, Alan, you know how these camps work like I do, where usually the known players that have offers are usually in the single-digit numbers. They're in terms of that's what the school knows, they're going to give them a single-digit number so they remember to watch them throughout the day. Well, Coy was like in the 50s or 60s. I mean, nobody knew who Coy Parrish from Esko, Minnesota was until you watched him do things that are athletic. You watched him run, you watched him jump, you watched him do different things. And that's how he got onto the radar for the first time, more or less, for the University of Minnesota. They end up offering him during his junior season. He obviously gains a bunch of attention from places like Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, commits to Minnesota in the spring. And then it gets very interesting at the end where, Alan, you and I both know everybody claims they have offers. They claim they have a lot of different things, and they maybe you see them commit to a school where it's like, well, if you had XYZ offer, why are you going here? Well, I can attest, when Ryan Day is taking a private plane from Columbus, Ohio to Duluth, Minnesota, which one of Alan's favorite towns, by the way, loves to play disc golf there. Duluth, Minnesota, coming down off the hill. He loves the wind underneath the wings that is his luxurious locks. Now, is your hair past your shoulders now?
It is. I cleaned it up a little bit for TV, but it's still. And by the way, you joke about that. I do like Duluth, and I have played the Dublin Pub in Duluth, Minnesota on part of my comedy tour.
You just coming out here and not saying hi to me, which would be very, very Alan True-esque.
Oh, this was pre Ryan Burns. That's how long ago I did that. Parent Dad Alan is not going all the way up to Duluth for one night comedy gigs. Nothing against that place.
Oh man, we could get a whole different podcast into your comedy stories. Maybe we get to some at the end, but the point I'm getting to is when Ryan Day, the head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes, is flying into Duluth, Minnesota 5 days before National Signing Day, I can probably say within reason, Alan, that this was a school that really wanted him. Took an official visit there. The undefeated 13-0 Florida State Seminoles wanted him, and ultimately he ends up signing with Minnesota. He is the third highest ranked kid to ever sign with Minnesota, behind some of Alan True's favorite in-state recruits of Jeff Jones and Carter Coughlin. But when you look at where Coy Parrish was, because I can't tell, I mean, you have a longer knowledge of this industry than I do, but even in my 12 years of doing this, I can't remember a Division I football player coming out of Northeast Minnesota, and now you get one that's currently ranked in the top 100. Have you seen this type of rise for a Minnesota kid in a long time, or what's your favorite Coy Parrish story?
Okay, that's a lot of stuff. First of all, I have confirmed that Ryan Day did not fly into Duluth to play disc golf. I checked all the UDisc scores. Unless he uses a dummy name, which he might, he was not playing disc golf up there. So
rim shot, good enough.
Yes,
good
one. Yeah. He was there to see Coy. So yes, with him, I don't, for one thing, I didn't know. I pride myself on knowing a lot of small towns in the Midwest where recruits have come from. When you brought up ESCO, I definitely had to look that up. And then I assumed it's going to be, you know, maybe we're an hour out of the Twin Cities and it's just a small suburb that I hadn't heard of. It was not. So I don't remember a kid from that part of the state being even like, I don't remember evaluating one, even one that went to like a Dakota school or anything like that. You might know better than me, but I'm struggling to remember one. Coy, I also don't remember a kid, because Jeff was kind of a made prospect from early on. Carter was a lower four when he started and then kind of worked his way up. I can't remember a guy going from as off radar to sort of like a three-star to top 100 in the way that Coy has. I don't think we have one that made a similar rise. Frank Ragnow kind of did that a little bit, but I don't think he ended as high as Coy.
Oh, that was one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite kids to come out of this state. Frank Ragnow, Chanhassen, Minnesota. He was really good to me back in the recruiting process. One of the nicest kids, great parents. And obviously has had a long career here with the Detroit Lions. But we go back to data points early on, and why has Coy jumped as high as he has? As much as it is his football tape, which we'll get into, we're talking about a kid that, as a junior, was the long jump champion in the state of Minnesota for his class. You're talking about a guy who's got a 10.8 100 meter time, a 22.2 200 meter time before he hurts his hamstring. You put his tape on the basketball court on. He scored 50 points in a game. We've seen clips of him dunking over people. So you look at data points from a kid who's coming from a town of, I just looked it up, just over 2,000 people in the state of Minnesota. How does a kid get bumped that high? Well, when you have track times that match what you're watching on TV or watching on the huddle tape, I should say, and then you watch his basketball tape too to see that twitch and explosion, I think it just at the end of the day, Alan, and to your point, he's going to be heading down to San Antonio to the All-American Bowl, and maybe he rises or falls a little bit more from there. But talk about data points in terms of with a small town kid, that's why things like that matter in terms of bumping a kid that high.
Yeah, it's I'm not as much of an analytics guy as some of the people on our staff. So sometimes I almost don't want to bring up the analytics in order to like just watch the football tape. But with Coy, I was like, I have a pretty good case here. So so I remember in the meeting when we all kind of went, everybody just go pull up this guy's basketball tape and watch him dunk on people. And I think that had a lot to do with it. But it's like, these aren't just data points. They're data points that are outstanding, like a 10, 8, 9. And the basketball tape's not just like, hey, he's pretty good at basketball. It's like he's throwing down over people. And then you put on the football tape and it all matches. So every metric was covered when it came to Coy. And the nice thing about track times is, for the most part, they're official. So you can trust that rather than kid tells you he got hand timed in a 40 in the summer somewhere. So they were all trustable data points. And then I think the rise continued. So maybe Minnesota fans either do want to, maybe this is a good thing, maybe it's not a good thing. He reminded us of Cooper DeJean. And
I want to stop right there because I know that's a comparison that's been thrown around quite a bit. I've used it myself, and I don't want us to be using it because of the obvious reasons. But what are the reasons your comp for him is Cooper DeJean?
Yes, it's not what you think it is, everybody. Okay, so don't nobody start a picket line outside of my house. It's not what you think it is. Listen, they're both small town guys, small school competition. So when you have that, you have to dominate it in our eyes. If you're gonna, it's not your fault that you play there, but dominate what's in front of you and do it in more than one place. Do it on offense, special teams, defense. Okay, check, check, check. Do it in other sports, check. And I think the basketball stuff was very similar. The multi-sport stuff, the multi-positional stuff, very similar. The small town aspect. So it was a pretty clear and easy comparison to make. So that's why we made the comparison between the two of them.
Yeah. And again, why I think they ultimately held on to him, other than him being a Minnesota kid, his brother playing at Mankato, another one of Alan True's favorite disc golf destinations. I believe he also opened a show down there at some point in his career.
I headlined Mankato. No, it wasn't Mankato. Maybe it was Mankato. Now I'm mixing.
Might have been Rochester.
Rochester.
You've been
to
so many different places in the state of Minnesota for your other types of careers. Who's to say?
Let me say this too. When we bumped Cooper, and if you look at it, Cooper was the top 150 guy for us. We invited him to the All-American Bowl, and we took a lot of flack for that. You know, small town kid who I think just had Iowa and Northern Iowa as his offers. And we were like, let's just trust what we think we're seeing here and trust the data points and bump this guy. And then it turns out we weren't even high enough. And so I think that's emboldened us to say, like, on guys like Coy, like this might not seem right on paper. This is kind of a non-traditional move, but let's trust it. And then at the end, when all these other schools came in, it was some validation for us. But Cooper's rise and us kind of going out on a limb with him makes us feel better about taking shots on guys like Coy too.
Yeah. And again, you talk about Coy's football tape. You and I watch enough highlight tapes a year. You watch probably tens of thousands. I'm only watching thousands, but you know, like I do, when you pull up a tape, normally it falls off after the first 60 seconds, maybe 90 if they're lucky. You put on Coy Parrish's senior tape, you're 5 minutes in and you're still going, you're just chuckling to yourself like, this is what it's supposed to look like. And I think obviously too, Minnesota's free safety development with Antoine Winfield Jr. under PJ Fleck, who's now arguably the top safety in the NFL in these last couple of months, Tyler Newbin another guy that Alan True had as a four-star coming out of high school that maybe some people after that 2020 season were like, boy, I don't know about that. Well, guess what? Alan True tends to be right more times than he's wrong. This is me being your hype man, Alan. And now Tyler Newbin is going to be a top 60 overall draft pick. So if you were going to be coy and you wanted to say, what position can Minnesota develop that Ohio State can also do, or Florida State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, wherever it may be. But if I only want to go south 2 hours, it'd be that free safety position for Minnesota. So just a crazy rise from a kid from Esko, Minnesota, where prior to his junior season, didn't have anything going on, and then ultimately signs on the dotted line, turning down Ohio State. So the next guy I want to turn to is the number one player in North Dakota. Again, I don't know if Alan's ever opened a show out there, but from Kindred, North Dakota, Riley Sunrum, 6'4", 295-pound defensive lineman. I know I have my own Riley Sunrum stories. I don't know if you want me to get into him. I was there the day he was offered, and I will go to my grave saying that camp performance I watched with my own two eyes is him as an underclassman going against offensive linemen a year or maybe even two older. Was one of the best camp performances I've seen in quite some time. I definitely understood why Minnesota offered, but it's not every day you get a kid from North Dakota who's number one, a four-star, number two in the top 24/7 rankings, and also an All-American Bowl invitee commit. So with Riley Sunrum, what did you like?
So first, I think we, over the years, have missed a number of guys in the Dakotas, and it's tough. Sometimes those guys walk on at a Dakota school. We've had walk-ons go to Dakota schools or other schools and turn out to be really good players or NFL picks. So it's made us say, like, we got to dig a little bit deeper in those states. And Huddle has obviously made that easier. But again, this is going to be a theme for this show, and I think for this class, is data points. And we go back to the throwing, first of all, with Nathan Roy. And Riley Sunrum doesn't just throw. I mean, he's like a state champ. The numbers are really, really good there. So he checks the multi-sport box for sure. He checks the multi-positional. We thought he really could have been recruited on either side of the ball. And you mentioned that camp performance. You brought it up to me right away. We liked the data. And then I think you turned on his early film, and it was good, but it wasn't like all the way up to, I think, his talent level and the competition he was playing against. We wanted to get more dominant. So he was stuck kind of in a high 3 and 89 for a while. And then I think the more that time went on and we started to see that dominance turn up, started to see him and to continue to progress technically on the football field and that part of his game catch up to his physical ability, then it was like, okay, the data's too good. And now the film is getting there. There's no reason to keep this guy out of four-star range. And then as that continued to progress, it was like, okay, this is an All-American kind of guy.
Yeah. Just not every day you get a kid from, I say this because I'm sure his family's listening, peace and love, Kindred, North Dakota, not exactly known as a football hub, even though they did just win a state championship, which I'm sure they would remind me of. But I will just – I mentioned that camp performance, and I've watched the tape like Alan has, but – Alan, how many camps do you go to throughout a given year? It's got to be probably 15, if not more.
Probably about that, yeah. I think we are getting a little bit more selective about what we go to. And some of that is company says, hey, you don't need to go run around to a couple camps to see the same kids over and over again and use company funds for that and, enjoy it. Now the calendar's so busy, too. It's like you got to take some time for yourself, but – Pre-children, Alan, man, there was times in June where I wouldn't be home for 3 weeks straight. So
good times. Back in the 2019 days.
You had to do that. You had to do that sometimes to get to see everybody. Now it's a lot easier. So, and then it's like I go to these camps and then afterwards, it's like I drive out to these camps and I come back home and all these kids are posting their own clips from the camp anyway. And I'm like, well, I could have sat at home and probably watched this. So the internet has made things easier. So please, Elon, don't screw X up because it really helps me do my job.
So the final All-American commit I want to pick your brain about is Brett Carroll from, I believe it's Olathe, Kansas. Someone that, talk about a kid too, that where I believe in like February. His loan, his first offer was, I think, like Southwest Missouri State or something. And then it seemingly Kansas and Kansas State figured him out, figured out who he was. They offered, he ultimately gets, I believe, double digit Power Five offers, commits to Minnesota. But we continue to come back to the same things. I know people are tired of it by now. But why is Brett Carroll probably an All-American Bowl commit? Well, he's 71-1 in his last 72 matches in terms of as a wrestler, which give me all the heavyweight wrestling champions. Someone that is one of the best freestyle folk guys in the wrestling world in terms of the heavyweight division. He put on the track. I believe he was state shot put champion down there. And then you put on the tape. Give us some strong John Michael Schmitz vibes to me, Alan. So when you look at Brett Carroll and where he's currently at, why do you think so many schools ended up going on Brett?
Yeah, so it's Olathe, by the way. It's just
Olathe. You
know. Olathe, yeah.
How do you get a th from a T-H-E?
I don't know the origin, the language of origin.
I'm going
to
have some angry Kansas people in my messages now, but I appreciate you. Olathe?
Olathe.
All right, well, there we go.
I don't know. If Minnesota continues to recruit Kansas, I want you to be correct
on this.
Sound
like a complete idiot.
It's all right. You're a loud one. You know, like people from Kansas would have to try to pronounce. What's the hardest city to pronounce in Minnesota?
What do you I'd love them Olatana? To look at the word Matamidi and try to give me something that even is close to resembling it.
Oh, man. Who was the offensive line recruit out of there?
Same high school class as me. We were rivals in high school, Alan True. His name was Tommy Olson.
That's it. Because I remember that was early in my career, and I was like, I don't know how to say it. I'm about to go on the air, and I have no idea how to say this city name. So I'm with you. But on Brett, I don't want to take up all of his time with our banter. With Brett, it actually, so the data points were there, but not as many as the other guys. With Brett, it was legitimately like the football film was really good. And he went to an Under Armour camp in Kansas City and did really well there. That was when he first kind of came onto our radar. But even that, I think it took another month after that before he picked up any offers. So it was kind of like, oh, Kansas State and Kansas just offered some dude inside the state, and then we put it together like, oh, that was the guy we saw that we liked about a month ago. But a pure football player. So, you know, some of the metrics weren't obviously the record that you just mentioned is very impressive, but there wasn't as much other stuff. But we did really like his tape. We really liked his camp performances. And sometimes you miss on these guys who are interior guys or true centers. John Michael Schmitz, we liked. He was a high three, should have been higher. And I think it's because interior offensive linemen aren't as quote unquote sexy, which is the word that we use sometimes positionally. And so we've missed on those guys at times. And it was like, this guy is really good. Let's not overthink this. And we need interior guys for the All-American Bowl. Let's put him in there. I also don't want to glaze over the fact that Minnesota went into Kansas and beat Kansas and Kansas State, and Oklahoma State was really strong there on him, went into Wisconsin and beat a bunch of schools on Nathan Roy, and beat UCLA, which he had ties out there. Brother played there. Like, that's two pretty good offensive line wins right there.
Yeah, I'd say Brian Callahan is a happy man this morning. He slept really well last night, knowing that those two young men made it to the dotted line, got their national letter of intent across, their binding. And yet I will have someone screaming into the ether at me, but Ryan, they're just going to transfer anyway, because that's all college kids do these days, which we can get into some transfer portal talk a little bit later, but I want to maybe go a little bit more rapid fire so we can get to some questions at the end on more of these Midwest signees from Minnesota. Mason Carrier, Detroit Lakes own Adam Thielen fans, stand up. I know that Alan True's got an Adam Thielen jersey in the back of his closet. He was always a big Minnesota Vikings fan growing up, as he currently is gritting his teeth because he's a gigantic Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Which, how do you feel about cheering for the Iowa of the NFL?
Oh, man, it's been a little bit of a tough year. I don't know that I've a couple of weeks ago, they were like 7-4 or something, or 7-5. And they were in like the 4 seed or the 5 seed. And I was like, I've never been so distraught over a season with a winning record and a playoff spot. I'm like, I'm upset every week and somehow they keep winning. And so now I think they've reverted back into more of what I, it is tough. Listen, me and my dad, we can't even watch games together at this point, because we end up being both so frustrated and that we end up getting mad at each other. It's not good for our relationship. So I've now just like, I don't even know what to think. I'm like, do I want the draft pick, or do I want us to keep fighting for a wild card spot? It's tough, but that's a whole nother podcast for sure.
So my claim to fame with Mason Carrier is I have to be the first person to see him. I saw him, I believe, as like a sophomore at a prep red zone camp. And I remember watching him run around, do athletic things. And I was like, yep, this is what it looks like. You're eventually going to be a Big Ten linebacker somewhere. It just happened to be. Minnesota also agreed first. And it meant a lot to him that the in-state school offered. He stuck with him even after some late attempts from some other schools potentially, and signed on the dotted line. To me, Alan, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Mason Carrier feels like someone that's going to bring the neck roll back into modern day college football. But what do you think about Mason Carrier?
That's a pretty good prediction. He actually on BTN yesterday, they said, who's the Dylan Thienemann of this class in the Big Ten? Who's the 3-star guy on defense that's going to, everyone's going to go like, where'd this guy come from? And I picked Mason. And I think that, you know, we just talked about a whole bunch of really standout athletes in this class. He's one of the safest bets, I think, to be an impact guy. Like when you look at this class and you're just like, who do you feel really safe on? Like, this guy's going to play and play well. I would pick Mason Carrier because of his approach to the game. And I mean, he is really explosive on tape running around. Even when they ran his film yesterday on BTN and I was watching it in the monitor, I was like, goodness gracious, do we have this guy high enough? Like, I mean, he really goes. And so I think when you play that way, he's obviously been in the weight room. He's physically ready to go. He's going to do everything it takes to get on the field. I really like this kid, and I think so. That's the best thing I can say about him. I think he's one of the safest bets in this class. Like, this guy will start. This guy will play. This guy, until that point, will probably be an awesome special teamer. I just can't see him not finding a way onto the field.
I want to talk about Minnesota's two tight end signees now, one from Illinois, one from the state of Iowa. But I want to start with Waubonsie Valley, I believe is how you – am I getting that one right, Alex?
You are, that one's correct. Yeah.
Waubonsie Valley, Illinois, high school in Illinois, Aurora, Illinois native, Julian Johnson. Now, to me, I'm not going to steal the thunder. Nobody's here to listen to me. What do you think of this comp? And I can't wait until you hear a comp today where you're like, Ryan, you're a moron, you're an idiot. But I think he is the tight end version of Jalen Mayfield. What do you think about that type of equivalent, or how is your Julian Johnson evaluation?
Wait, how are we equating Julian? What is the tight end version of Jalen Mayfield mean?
A very big athlete. Someone I don't think gets as big as what Jalen Mayfield did. Now, for folks like, who in the world is Jalen Mayfield? Jalen Mayfield was a one-time Minnesota commit, signed with Michigan, put on like 70 pounds and became, wasn't he a top 100 draft pick when he declared?
He was. Yep.
So
started as a rookie.
When I look at Julian, we don't have a ton of senior tape to look at for him, but the frame is enormous. As someone I still think can easily get to 250, if not 260, and it's going to take a couple of years for him to do so. But the other thing I know we've always talked about is, you know what team was really angry that he committed to the University of Minnesota? That would be the Iowa Hawkeyes, who wanted him as either a tight end or defensive end. And I think historically, if that's the two positions that Kirk Ferentz wants you at, I'd say he's got a pretty good track record of knowing what talent looks like, Alan.
That's pretty undeniable at those positions. So Julian, I mean, you talk about like, I think Mason, what we're kind of getting at is this kind of safe, high floor guy. Not that he doesn't have upside, but that's what we're getting at with him. I think Julian is a little bit the opposite, where the ceiling, what's left to go there, is so enticing. I think that's what you're getting at too. Yeah. With your Jalen Mayfield comparison. These big kind of high school wide receivers, that can stand outside and make plays on the ball and then also play defense. And usually if those guys can pack on the weight and keep those skills, they end up being pretty good. And I think that's what you have here. Can do a lot of things away from his body and really is just, I don't think anywhere close to tapped out. And so with him, it's just how big of a jump can he make once he gets to college? And I think the chances are it'll be pretty good. He's got the skills, he's got the upside. And so, like you said, maybe not the finished product that some of these other guys we talked about were, but that's recruiting. You're taking a shot on, can you develop this guy? And I think he has a lot of tools and gifts. And that's why as school started to see him fill in and see what he could do, his recruitment really kind of went from, he looked like he was headed G5. And then all of a sudden one day it exploded and he was one of the most heavily coveted Power Five guys in the state of Illinois.
The whole month of April for him was picking up double-digit Power Five offers. He was arguably the hottest prospect in the Midwest that month with the amount of Power Fives that came in on him. And Minnesota, I think I had him as, when we did our signing day awards piece, you, myself, and Zach Johnson, I think I had Julian as the highest upside guy. Now, upside versus floor, we can get into that whole discussion, but I mean, that's how I think the ceiling on Julian Johnson is. It's pretty spectacular, but it's going to be on him to obviously reach that. You mentioned high school receivers that are going to be playing a different position at the next level. That's our next guy from Johnston, Iowa, Jacob Simpson, someone that multiple Power Fives went on, the in-state Hawkeyes did not. But I can assure you this is someone that Minnesota is really excited about. When you watched his junior and senior tape, what stood out to you about Jacob Simpson?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. His ability to run routes and catch the ball at his size. He really, his school plays him like a big wide receiver. And I thought that he showed a lot of body control, ball skills, and position. He really played the position well like a wide receiver. So kind of similar to what we're saying about Julian, where I think he's going to put on the weight probably to learn to put his hand down sometimes and figure those things out. But as far as like a pure pass catcher who can create some mismatches, like this guy can do that. It'll be a very interesting case study that Iowa did not go on him. And this was in a class where they needed some tight ends, and they took two other kids. And I think that Minnesota obviously loved Jacob. I know some other schools like Texas Tech, who knows a thing or two about throwing the football traditionally. They really wanted him. So it's that I think the right schools were recruiting him. And I think he's also got a ton of upside. You know, he didn't get a ton of targets at the high school level, but he made the most out of the ones he got. And another multi-sport guy, if I believe, right? I think baseball, basketball, he's played some other.
I think so. Yeah.
Other sports. Yeah. So, another guy who checks some boxes as far as the data points and the metrics.
All right, we got five Midwest guys left, and then some questions. Jaden Wright, Bishop McNamara High School, same one as Chris Ottman Bell, coming out of the state of Illinois. 5'10", 220 pounds. Gives me some Kai Thomas vibes, but when you watched Jaden Wright as a senior, what stood out?
As a senior, I thought the tape was really, really good. I thought it was another leap forward. I think what stands out about him is he's a big back that can do some little back things. You know, they throw him a lot of screens. He changes directions really well. He still can put his head down and run through contact like a bigger back, but he's asked to do just about everything. Or he was asked to do just about everything at the high school level. Defensive tape, actually really good also. So that's what really stood out about him. And again, that's, you go back to what we said about some of the other guys in this class. He doesn't play in the highest classification in Illinois. So again, not your fault, but go dominate it. And I thought he did that on both sides of the ball this season. So big back that can catch the ball out of the backfield, can make some people miss, and isn't all just kind of bull in China shop.
Now the next guy comes from my rival high school growing up. They were the private school. We were the public school. Hill Murray High School in Maplewood, Minnesota. Simon Seidel. Now, I don't pretend to know a lick about the game of hockey, even though I'm living in the state of hockey. I think I've laced up the skates twice in my life and I definitely cannot skate to save my life. But I'm told that when you score, I think he scored 15-ish points last year for a Hill Murray hockey team who's one of the best in the state of Minnesota. I believe in the consolation state championship game, he had 2 goals. And, Alan, I don't know that you're an elite Minnesota State high school hockey mind, but there's a lot of people in this state that take a lot of pride in something like that. So when you look at Simon Seidel, I think he is certainly very raw, but the athletic data points on this kid are why he's ranked as high as he is, considering the offers that he had.
By the way, I can't believe that your big burly self isn't graceful on the ice. That is shock of the morning for me, that a man who sits in a tree stand still for hours at a time somehow then can't translate that into triple sow cows. But I digress.
Triple sow. Yeah, that's what they do out there with the sticks in their hands, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Like you said, great hockey mind. Yeah. So with him, again, data points. And wasn't a guy that was that heavily recruited, and then things started to pick up. People started to find out about him. But another upside play, I think, when you run low 11s on the track, I would think this spring he's got a real chance to get under that and get into the 10s if he runs. Hockey is, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that sport, right? You have to be very coordinated. You have to be strong. You have to be fast. You have to have some twitch. So that's a good sign. You've got length. I think just needs to continue to polish up learning to play football. And there are signs of that. And I think that when you combine all of those things, it's just another kid who you would say the best is probably ahead for him. I think it's a great shot to take that we can, that they can develop him. Like, let's take this guy. He's got all this athleticism. He's got this length. He's got all the things we like in an athlete. And then let's try to figure it out and develop him. Would think corner.
Yeah.
But you know, if that doesn't work out, there's other avenues there, maybe safety. But I think it's hard to find corners with length and speed, and you can teach him the rest. He's got the baseline physical tools.
Now, a guy back in the fall, winter of last year that you and I talked a lot about was a kid from Eden Prairie by the name of Mo Sain. I think we had some differing opinions on him at the time. Maybe there was a revamped huddle tape that was a topic of discussion between the two of us, but Mo Sain eventually ends up with the University of Minnesota. With Mo Sain, how do you think of him compared to some of the defensive linemen of yesteryear that Minnesota has signed?
He's a super interesting prospect. If there's a guy in this class that I think could most kind of prove us wrong, it's him. I mean, he makes you nervous about where we have him ranked, because I think there is big upside there. And interior defensive linemen sometimes for us get hard to rate because they don't make as many plays as edge guys traditionally. And when you look at college and the NFL, sometimes they're just looking for big bodies who can give you some snaps. And so we've missed on this kind of guy in the past. Now, the tape, like you said, there were times where some of his young tape, we were kind of like not really sure what to think of it. And then there were other times where it got rearranged or he put a new tape out where we go, whoa, that's pretty good there. So I think with him, you know, we've talked about high floor guys. We've talked about high ceiling guys. I think with him, there's a big variance in the directions he could go. I think there's maybe some low floor there and some really high ceiling. So if they get, if he reaches his ceiling, I think he could be a draft pick. I think that bodies like his, who are athletic like he is, are in demand. He's got some stuff to learn, no doubt. But if he develops, I think that could be a real steal. Probably not talked about enough in this class. Again, defensive tackle, not a real sexy position, but I think there's tremendous upside there.
Now, the track record for Jalen Smith isn't his fault. And what I mean by that is you look at the recent track record for Minnesota in-state receivers, and it's not great, which is a whole different podcast about how I explain to everybody in this audience. Minnesota has the worst 300-mile radius of football prospects to choose from compared to any other Big Ten team, and it's not close, but that's a different podcast. So it's not Jalen Smith's fault, but if he's going to break kind of the recent track record of in-state receivers not panning out, what is going to break right for him?
So in that time, how many of those guys ran 10-8?
Oh, Jonathan Mann did not. I don't know if Kristen Hoskins did or not, but they're Kristen Hoskins and Jalen Smith are very different in terms of body size, how they win, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Dorian Singer is maybe.
Yeah, Dorian Singer, Tartan High School former before he transferred out to a random Arizona town for his senior year.
But I think that's where Jalen is intriguing, is that top end speed. And you see flashes of it on film. You see him be able to take the top off of defense. And kind of like what we said about Jacob Simpson, maybe didn't get a ton of targets, but made the most of it. I think he had 9 touchdowns on 36 catches this year. So he's scoring a quarter of the time he catches the ball. So he's explosive. I think there's also some things to be learned there, but you can't really teach 10-8. And he's got good size. So I think the physical ability is there, and I think he's going to a place that's done a pretty good job developing wide receivers. So I think if there's a difference between him and the other guys, it's that we do have a really good data point on straight line speed, which is important for wide receivers. So that gives him, I think that gives him a chance to, he's another guy that could outplay his ranking if he reaches his ceiling. It was just kind of a battle for us on, like, that's a really good track time. Film's good. He's beaten up on his competition, but we haven't really seen him do a ton in person. Haven't seen him run a ton of the route tree, even on his tape. And there's some rawness there. So he kind of met in the middle as far as his ranking goes. But if that guy's running 4.4 at a pro day in 4 years and on the cusp of getting drafted, I think that's the ceiling.
Now, the last guy we'll talk about before we get into some questions is Sam Macy, Chanhassen, Minnesota. Someone that's near and dear to my heart only because he played most of his senior season with 2 broken shoulders, a.k.a. labrums, I believe, and had to tough it out, ends up becoming a state champion, now is going to enroll early. To me, I think the guy we've compared him to before is Danny Strigow. I think he's longer than Danny, where I think Danny also has a really good wrestling background. But I think it's pretty clear that there's a direction that Minnesota's trying to go at their rush end position, that stand-up spot on their 4-down linemen between Carter Menz and Sam Macy. So what are some of the trends you're starting to see with the way Minnesota is starting to try and recruit these pass rushers?
Yeah, with those guys, I think the first thing is like relentlessness. That was the biggest thing on Danny's tape. I remember it was like, goodness gracious, this guy plays fast and he plays every play like his life depends on it. And I think you see that with Sam. We loved Sam's tape early. I know you and I talked about him early on. I think he was like 185, 190 pounds.
Yeah, he was 190 pounds as a junior, and he has worked really hard to get that number up to, I think, 220 now. And that was the only thing, was can he be athletic when he adds another 30, 45 pounds? Because, Alan, if you add another 30, 45 pounds to mine, I think we're going to have to start talking about Lipitor with me. But for him, it's just about filling out his frame.
Yeah, that would not help your skating goals if you added that weight. But with him, so he's always been like a great player. He turned on the tape, was like, this is one of the best tapes in the state, but he's 190 pounds playing edge. You know, what can we do with that? And we still liked him enough to get him ranked and say, like, somebody's going to get a steal here. But then when he added the weight, then it was like, okay, now we might be getting into Power 5 territory, or territory where Minnesota needs to look at him for a scholarship. And so I think you really like that. I mean, he just another guy who I think is a safe bet to find some way to help this football team, because he plays so hard. You talked about playing through the injuries. You talked about working hard to put the weight on. Those stories usually turn out pretty well when you have that kind of determination. And when you watch him play, it's pretty obvious that's the way he approaches life and sports and football.
So we got plenty of questions to get to here. And if at any point I start to run over time really, really badly, you just cut me off and we'll get going. But I think there's a lot of big picture questions, because you and I are entrenched into this recruiting industry that's obviously seen a lot of change in just the last few years. So I think the question I want to have you start with is, how is high school recruiting changing in the transfer portal era?
So I would say it's changed more at the G5 level. You know, you have MAC schools who take sometimes single digit high school kids now. At the Big Ten level and at the Power Five level, I don't think it's changed as much. Maybe a couple of spots of difference, but they're getting so much roster turnover that the transfers are now kind of replacing other transfers. And so you still bring in a good number of high school kids. I think it's starting to become a convenient thing for people to say when they have a high school kid who isn't getting recruited to the level that they want them to just say, well, this is because of the transfer portal. I do think that for the guys who are borderline FCS Division I, maybe that changes a little bit. I also think it depends on the part of the country you live in, because in Minnesota and Wisconsin and in the Dakotas, you know, the Dakota schools and the D2 schools and the other FCS schools in the region recruit the same as they always have, in my opinion. So there's always going to be a home for those kids. So there has been some effect. I think that that effect on the high school kids is starting to get to the point where it's a little bit exaggerated. I think that it was a perfect combination a few years ago of COVID and then the transfer portal and some of the new rules that produced really small high school classes for some of the G5 schools and maybe a handful of the Power 5 schools. Now I think that schools are rectifying their rosters and their numbers, and we're getting closer back to where we were before that, where schools are taking fuller classes of high school kids again.
Now, I don't know if you're going to want to touch this, but I at least have to ask. I don't want you to name names. I don't want you to name universities. But the topic of NIL is one that I've been broaching on this Gopher Illustrated message board for some time. I can assure you, I think Flex said yesterday, Minnesota's NIL is up tenfold from where it was last year, and that's credit to the fans. But they are still behind a lot of Big Ten schools. So here's the question for you, and I'm going to phrase it in a way where I think you'll be able to address it a little bit, because you and I hear numbers all the time of a kid is allegedly offered this, or this collective for this school has this much to work with. But if you were going to give your best guess in this new Big Ten, which is obviously adding USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon, how many Big Ten teams would you put in the top 10 when it comes to NIL donations, if you had to guess?
Ooh. With the new schools added, that's interesting.
You're going to put USC in there regardless, because let's be honest.
I mean, Oregon.
Yep.
I would maybe say Ohio State does get some. I hear different things there. But that might be it. You know, there's some schools in the Big Ten that are doing well with NIL, but I think when you hear what's going on in other places,
such as down in the southern part of the country, is what
down in the southern part of the country and over into the big state of Texas.
Okay.
I think you get I hear some big numbers there.
Okay.
So maybe three in the top 10.
Okay.
And NIL is interesting to me, and my hunch on this could be a little bit outdated, but I think it only, like in Minnesota's class, or even you take any other Big Ten class, I think NIL matters for a handful of kids in that. And for the rest of the kids, you know, maybe you'll get some package that helps you out month to month, but we're not talking like life-changing money enough to where you should make your college decision based on that.
And like are kids every single year that get to be in that, what would you say? Is 5% too much? Would it be the 1% that's where the life-changing money is allegedly exchanged?
Yeah. And then that money becomes life-changing a lot of the time after you've done something also, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're Darius Taylor, you get to maybe now say like, I might be worth a little bit more than what I thought I was, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those guys, that it happens later on, walking out of a high school, getting life-changing money, those get publicized the most. Those get talked about the most, but that's a very small percentage. I cover a lot of kids in the Midwest that sign with Division I schools. And I would say for that, like 99% of those kids, NIL should not be a factor. And I don't think is a factor in why they choose the school. They pick schools still on where do I want to go to school? Where do I have the best relationships? Where can I get developed? Where can I win? And where can I maybe go to the pros? And then do I like the other guys in the class? Those are still mainly the factors. Now, if you ask me 2 years later, after those guys have done something and are now thinking about entering the portal, or should I stay in my own school? Then NIL becomes a factor in retaining those guys or having those guys leave. Out of high school, I don't think NIL is as big of a factor as people think it is after the first however many kids. Once you get into another tier of recruit, I don't, and especially in the Big Ten, I don't think that most of the guys that I talked about on the air yesterday on BTN, NIL was a factor in their recruitments.
No, another question I'd be curious for your thoughts would be, I know I talked to obviously coaches here at Minnesota in the Dakotas, but you have a much more expansive network and probably a better mindset and on this. But the question is, what insight do you get from coaches on how they feel about recruiting these days? I can't imagine the roller coaster of not only recruiting high school kids, but your own kids. And then I'm trying to fill in through free agency, AKA the portal. So when you've talked to a lot of these college coaches, whether they've been at the Big Ten, MAC, wherever they may be across America, what is the kind of insight you would tell listeners about how college coaches feel about recruiting these days?
I don't know that anybody says, like, it's perfect. This is great. I enjoy it every day. And nothing needs to be changed. No one would say that. It's a grind. There's a lot going on at once in a short, you're jamming a lot into a short period of time. And then I think at the five level on down into D2 and even NAIA, it's like, it's hard to build rosters and keep things going when our best players are always thinking about entering the portal or getting poached. In the MAC, that happens. You know, the best players in the MAC generally are leaving. And so it's hard to sustain that, but it is this time of year, boy, these coaches are very stretched. And I think that's where the power of having big staffs and off-field staffs and people who can help you evaluate portal guys and help you keep guys on your own roster intact and evaluate high school players. It's just, it's monumental to be having people off of the coaching staff doing that. And so I think you'll see schools continue to up that. And it's down into like student assistants now. So it's a big job. There's a lot of people working a lot of hours to figure all of this out.
Now, I don't know how much you're going to want to get into this one, but I love to put you on the hot seat. Is from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe you know more about this than I do. The way I understand it is we currently sit here in time on December 21st, 2023. Minnesota's NIL collective is not in the same tier as Wisconsin or Iowa's, for example, which it is what it is. But when you don't have that NIL compared to maybe some of the other Big Ten teams that we've mentioned, what do you think are realistic expectations for PJ Fleck or whoever the head coach is here, where in this NIL era, to your point, there's a lot of poaching going on. There's a lot of tampering, but what do you think are realistic expectations knowing what you now know about where Minnesota stands in NIL?
I think considering that this is the kind of class that you should expect. And I think they should be honestly applauded for being able to get Coy Parrish and Nathan Roy and Riley Sunderman, some of the top end of this class, without the benefit of that. And then I think in the guys that we've talked about this being a data-driven class, an upside-driven class. I think you have to hit on some Jalen Smiths and some Simon Seidels and some Julian Johnsons. In order to make that successful. And I think the good thing about PJ and this staff is they've done that going back to Western Michigan. They've always found some guys that other people seem to miss. So I think that's where this is like, you're a program of, of development. They do a good job of finding these guys at camp. There's attested by how many stories you've told on this podcast about guys they found at camp. I think that's what you have to do. To think that they're going to go toe to toe and win a class full of koi parriches, that's probably not the play. But can they find a Jalen Smith who has good track times that other schools miss on and develop that guy into somebody who can help them win games and maybe eventually play on Sundays? I think that's where you know you're going to hope for the John Michael Schmitzes of the world. You're going to build your program on that kind of guy, and I think that's still extremely possible.
What advice would you give to a big time recruit in the current environment, considering, would you recommend he looks at a place where playing time is more readily available, with the caveat that the transfer portal is always an option to get paid? Or would you tell the big time recruit to stick with the status quo and maybe sit on the bench while potentially earning more NIL money initially?
It's very different for, I mean, everybody's situation is different. I think it's different depending on your situation. Some kids and their families are in a spot where they need that NIL. You know, I know that that's been brought up sometimes where a couple of kids have said, like, you know, this money could help get my parents from place to place, help them see games and that kind of thing. If you have the luxury to where that's not a factor, I always think, and this is, we're going to get into Alan's life philosophy here, Ryan, like chasing the money usually I would say is not what you want to do. Go where you're going to be comfortable. Go where you're going to enjoy your college experience. Go where you have good relationships and things will turn out for you anyway. And go where you think you can play, because like we've established, if you have an NIL promise up front and you don't, or you don't have one up front, you can play your way into it. So going to a place where I think that money's great and it'll help you do a lot of things, but 4 years of an enjoyable college experience and one where you can play yourself into more, if you establish yourself as a starter, you'll probably make more NIL money off of that than what you were promised coming out of high school anyway. So I still think that that should be a low factor for the majority of high school kids, because most of them, their earning potential will be higher in 2 years or 3 years than it is coming out of high school. The guys we're talking about who are getting NIL deals that they should really consider as part of why they choose a school is a really small percentage of kids. All those other kids should be looking at other factors.
Now, this is one I'm going to be curious to hear your perspective on. I am not a crystal ball guy. I don't think I've put in a crystal ball in probably 8 years. It's been a long time. I'm team maybe insinuate, but let the kid have their moment. But I also understand in this business, it's a business. And you are also told to do potentially what the higher ups tell you to do. So it comes down to, say, the Koi Parrish conundrum for this one. News came out, I believe, on what was it, Monday? Everything kind of runs together that I think a colleague of ours in the network put out that he heard Koi was going to be sticking with Minnesota. So when you're approaching something like that, or you know a kid is going to commit to XYZ place, but how do you balance the whole crystal ball versus letting the kid have their moment in 2023?
So that's a tough balance. And I usually err more on the side of like not damaging relationships or ruining the moment. But you also have people who, you know, subscribe to our website to be in the know. Right. So we do a service to those people, and that's part of my job. So you want to do it well. I think the whole having your moment thing and the whole shock the world thing, if I'm being honest, maybe this shows my age, I think it's a little bit silly. Like most of the time you're not shocking the world. And most of the time, if there's excitement built up for the announcement and people kind of have an idea and the fans of that school know, it actually helps you. And I think if you clue the media in, it also helps you get better coverage. The stories are prepared. The graphics are prepared. If you just drop something out of the sky, it might be exciting in that moment, but I think the coverage is typically worse. So I think the whole, like, I want to keep this a secret from everybody has kind of been overplayed by this point. And I also think the predicting of where a recruit's going to go and the talk about that has existed long before the crystal ball ever did. Mm-hmm. Right. It's been on message, but like it was on message boards or it was talked about around town. Like people were guessing where you were going. The crystal ball is just like an easier way for people to see what that is. For me, it comes down to relationship with the kid and the circle. And are they okay with me doing it? If I know it's a sensitive one, I'll usually ask, like, is it okay if I put a crystal ball pick in? Or do you want me to keep this off record? Do you want me to not predict something? How do you want me to handle this? And usually they'll give me some guidance on how they want me to do that. I don't like just dropping those in without some idea of how upset that will make the people involved in it. So that's how I usually do it. And I think we're going to tinker with that whole system, I think, and figure out a good way to clue fans in on what they need to know without spoiling it. Now, that said, the times that I've held it and said, like, I'm not going to say anything here because I don't want to ruin the moment. Somebody else inevitably ruins the moment. And I'm like, well, shoot, I could have just done that. Yeah, I knew that 3 days ago. So there's so many now, like every site has their version of the crystal ball. So that's another thing of balancing it out is like, well, if I stay silent and I don't say anything, am I just going to get beat to the punch on this anyway? Eventually somebody says something before sure. The kid announces most of the time.
All right. The last serious question before I'll let you have a little fun here on the podcast is what guys in this Gophers class have developed the most over the past year and which players have the most untapped potential in the eyes of the pickleball playing vegan himself?
I think Riley Sunrum has come, from sophomore tape to junior tape to senior tape. The jumps have been tremendous. I think Julian Johnson, same thing. And so then I think when you talk about untapped potential, Julian might be that's he's going to have one of the highest there. I think Simon Seidel, for some of the reasons we outlined, just so much athleticism there. And, the football, I think, still catching up to what his athletic ceiling can be. So those guys come to mind right away. I think if there's anything else, Jaden Wright, I think his tape, if you put on the sophomore tape and the senior tape, there's been a ton of improvement and jumps there as well. He's another guy that I think if you watch the senior tape, it's not saying like these guys couldn't play when they were sophomores, but I think he's come a long way and there's been some big jumps there also.
So let's have a little fun now to end this thing out. This question says, Alan, how bad does it suck to work with Evan Flood and Nick Ozen and the Iowa 24/7 guys and their misinformed perception of reality? And when in turn, working with Ryan must seem like a piece of cake and a real pleasure for you. Can you explain, or let's have you compare myself to Flood and Ozen and Ike Holt and Bach down in Iowa?
All right. Let's see. I'm going to do this like from a scouting report standpoint.
Oh, Lord.
And by the way, listen. I'm not just saying this. You guys aren't all perfect. There's days where I'm like, goodness gracious, this text, this text from one of those gentlemen you just named, or this caller, like Burns calling again. Good God. But then at times when other schools from outside the region come in and recruit a kid from the Midwest and I have to deal with some of them, I'm like, you know what? I kind of like my Midwest crew. We have a pretty good group. Like I'll remove, I guess Ozen's not Iowa State anymore. But as a Big Ten crew, I think we've got it pretty good. Would you agree with that? But our publishers and people who cover recruiting for the individual sites in the Big Ten, we've got it pretty good.
Bach works his tail off down there. He's one of my favorite people out there. Ozen works his tail off. I've obviously met Flood. Flood's a good guy. I mean,
Jeremy Warner does an amazing job at Illinois, right?
Yeah, Jeremy Warner is one of my favorite people on the entire network, even though he drank me under a table at Big Ten Media Days, and I blame my morning after him. I mean, we do have it pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, we have it pretty good. So I don't have a lot of complaints. And in times that I get annoyed with you guys, and I do that sometimes, it's because you guys are overzealous. It's because you're all trying to do your job well. And I'm like, calm it down, man. Take a chill pill. Like, we'll get the story. We'll know what the kid's doing. Let's relax a little bit. At the same time, it's like trying to coach a player who's going a million miles in a drill, and you're like, slow down and do it right instead of fast. But you want the enthusiasm to still be there. That's you guys. That's you and Ozen a lot of the time. It's like, you know what, man? You don't have to do every drill at 100 miles an hour. Just do it correctly and relax. Everything will be okay. And I feel like I'm like the unofficial team therapist sometimes, where I'm like, are you struggling with anxiety today? Is there a pill I can give you, or can I recommend a therapist for you to calm you down a little bit? But at the same time, I think that's what makes us great. So it's a real balance for me of trying to make you better and not undoing the things that make you guys good at your job. So perception of reality, listen. And at the end of the day, sometimes I'm like, boy, these guys are homers and they are out of touch with reality sometimes. And they say some things where I'm like, where did that comment come from? But all of them deal with fan bases. All of you guys do deal with fan bases who pay $9.95 a month to find out, you know, who's winning the third string tight end battle. And where is this 84 rated kid from Canada going to go? So I think that we cater to that type of people. So in order to cater to hardcore people, you yourself have to be a little bit hardcore. So I get it. And that's why there's regional guys like me who sort of try to be in the middle and center everybody.
Tom Fornelli tweeted this yesterday, and I resonate with it. It says your school's signing day class is underrated, and all the best players in your rival's class will transfer once their coach gets fired. So, Alan, tell me why Minnesota is underrated, yet all the best players in Wisconsin and Iowa's classes are going to transfer once Kirk Ferentz and Luke Fickell get fired here in the next few days.
So, first of all, the amount of times that I've been called biased by somebody with a screen name like Badgers over everything 2043 is like, I'm like, okay, you've got Mary Alvarez as your avatar and that's your screen name, and you think I'm biased towards the school or you know, Gophers forever. I love all of you guys, but it's like, I'm not the one with the bias here. Okay, season ticket holder. So yes, everybody in Minnesota's class is underrated. We moved all of them down after they committed to Minnesota.
Well, yeah.
Because why wouldn't we? We actually move all commits down to every school after they commit to that school. Don't ask me how the math and the physics work on that, but they all go down. We've moved everybody down. We hate everybody. We've underrated the entire country.
Obviously, once somebody commits to Wisconsin, you just bump them up immediately because they're going to a wonderful town in Madison.
Madison is a nice town. It is. I will say that. Yeah. And so And so, yes, all of your three-star recruit, all of your three-star commits are Patrick Mahomes. All of your two-star commits are Cooper Kupp, and they're all going to turn out. That's
the way it goes.
Isn't that amazing? It is incredible. Like your three-star quarterback who's going to convert to tight end will be dating Taylor Swift in 4 years. That's what happens.
That's the way it goes. All right. The last thing I want to talk to you about before we let you go is I had a couple members tell me in person yesterday at a signing day social, and they have asked on the message board. For folks who don't know, Alan True is also a comedian, pretty accomplished comedian at that. And I hate to gas you up in any way because it usually goes straight to that head of yours, but they want to put me on the floor. They want to put me in the chair. They want it to be a little bit of a roast of Ryan Burns. And considering you and I talk quite a bit, you know a lot about me, and I guess a lot of things in my life are fair game. So if you want to take an opportunity to come at my head, the floor is yours.
Okay. This is what I'm going to do. because I am running out of time. And I like to be very well prepared for roasts. Okay. I'm going to do this on the message board at a later point. I'm going to write it. I'm going to research it. Do you remember NFL corner named Fred Smoot?
Yes.
Remember Fred Smoot? Fred yeah. Smoot used to research his opposing wide receivers. Do you remember that? He would look up wives' names, mothers' names, and he would like line up across from the wide receiver, and he'd be like, hey, tell Donna I said hello. And the receiver would be like, what the hell? How does this guy know all this? And this is like in a time where information wasn't as readily available. I'm going to Fred Smoot you, and I'm going to research, and I'm going to prepare for this. I've won 4 roast battles, by the way, in this town, and I'm not as good of an off the cuff roaster. So I'm going to take some time, especially with my brain where it's at right now. I can hear the canned huddle music in my head. So roasting Ryan Burns, I would not be at my best right now. And this is a big deal. I want to give people my best. I'm gonna take a little bit of time, and then we're gonna do it on the board.
All right, sounds good to me. I could use a little bit of a laugh. Considering
I need to find data points on you. That's what tie it all together.
Well, I can't wait for it. And then everybody, Minnesota fans, Wisconsin fans, and Iowa fans. I've had multiple Iowa and Wisconsin fans email me, direct message me in the last 24 hours, telling me how much of a they're really big fans, really big fans. Alan, so I could use a laugh, especially a couple days before Christmas.
That's what makes this fun, though, right? Like, you don't want those, you know.
I just like
my goal is by the time I get out of this, by the time I retire or whatever it is that I do next, I'm trying to get called a homer of every Big Ten school at least once. And now that's just gotten harder. We've added 4 new schools. So I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to have each of those schools also. I'm trying to be called a homer of every school, and I'm also trying to get to the point where everybody, like I say, I hate that school also. Yep. Like I've been said, like, you're a Michigan State homer, and then their fans are like, why do you hate Michigan State? I'm like, well, I can't be both. So I'm trying to get that for every single school in the Big Ten.
Well, thank you for coming on today. Obviously, yesterday was our Christmas. It's National Signing Day. It's the biggest day of the year, and you being able to come on with me the day after, we appreciate your time. You are a humble man. You're a short man. As the kids would say, you got a little bit of riz to you, as I've seen in person a couple of times. But
oh, boy. We're going to get into that. Huh? Yeah. Anyway, say hi to Liz for me. That's my
Fred. I will say hi to my wife.
That's my Fred Smoot.
Oh, God. Okay. Yep. Can't wait to see what you come up with here over the next 3 weeks to roast me on the message board. But thank you for coming on today to talk about the 2024 class, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me.